From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
I just met with FBI Director Christopher Wray and Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
That was the U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday at a press conference as he described actions being taken by the White House and the Department of Justice in reaction to violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, this past weekend.
The Department of Justice has opened a civil rights investigation into the deadly car attack that killed one innocent American and wounded 20 others. To anyone who acted criminally in this weekend's racist violence, you will be held fully accountable.
Trump's statements immediately after the incident happened on Saturday criticized violence on all sides. His comments Monday, after his conversations with the Attorney General and the Director of the FBI, were much more specific.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America. As a candidate, I promise to restore law and order to our country, and our federal law enforcement agencies are following through on that pledge. We will spare no resource in fighting so that every American child can grow up free from violence and fear.
There are as many opinions about what happened this past weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, as there are people willing to voice them. We spoke with an eyewitness who's a longtime freedom and justice fighter. His name is Phil Wiledo. He's a writer, speaker, and organizer based in Richmond, Virginia, a founding member of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, which is an all-volunteer community organization, and he's the editor of the quarterly newspaper, The Virginia Defender, which can be seen at www.defendersfje.org. We spoke with him via telephone from Richmond, Virginia, on Tuesday. Philip, unlike many of the people that have offered their opinions on what's happened exactly in Virginia over this past weekend, you're there, you've been there. Why don't you tell us exactly what happened leading up to what has been reported over the weekend?
Yeah, well, of course, it's been a developing situation. It was in February that the Charlottesville City Council voted to take down two statues that it has in the city, one to Confederate General Robert E. Lee and the other to General Stonewall Jackson. And they've been up since the 20s, which, of course, was just a phenomenally horrible time in this country. The Klan being very strong and black people being disenfranchised, Jim Crowism at its height. It was just an awful period for the black community. These statues were put up to say, yeah, that's right, we're in charge. You know, don't step out of line, and we mean it. And that's why they're so offensive.
Right.
They, you know, in the whole Lost Cause mythology and so on. So Charlottesville is a town of 47,000 people. It's home to the University of Virginia, which is a flagship university of the state university system. It's considered very liberal, but the 20% the community that is black has another view of the issue that they've expressed over the years. And there's a lot of institutional racism and tremendous disparities in income and family wealth in the city that, you know, a lot of folks who are not affected by it directly seem to be, you know, relatively okay with. And then this issue comes up, you know, simple thing about taking down a couple of statues. So there's a VCU graduate who is a local right-wing blogger named Jason Kelser. And he did some digging and found out that the city council member who had, who had suggested taking down the statues, had some years ago made some of pretty offensive tweets concerning race and sex. He's African-American, and I guess he was feeling kind of upset about some things, and he put out some things that he now regrets, that he since apologized for. But there was a little firestorm around that, and he was forced to resign from his high school teaching job and his position on the 9-member Virginia Board of Education. Yeah. But he was able to stay on council. And as I say, he's repudiated his former comments, which are much less offensive than what the President of the United States has done. So then, on May 13th, Richard Spencer, who is also a graduate of UVA and president of a group called the National Policy Institute based in Arlington, Virginia, which is a white supremacist, kind of like to portray itself as a think tank, but you know, it's just a platform for spewing racism. And he held a torchlit rally of more than 100 racists at the Lee statue, which is located in Lee Park. It's the city council that says renamed Emancipation Park. They've renamed Jackson Park to be Justice Park. Mm-hmm. The other rally there was a nighttime rally, and the photos of it were completely evocative of an old style Klan rally. Mm-hmm. And it sent real chills through the neighborhood. People came out to protest. There were some scuffles. No arrests, but it got quite a bit of attention. So a ragtag group of actual Klansmen from North Carolina, a group that's rejected by a lot of other Klan groups for being dysfunctional and suspicious for cooperating with law enforcement authorities and so on, they decided to come up and have a rally on July 8th. So we were out there for that, and there were about 35 of them, and there were more than 2,000 angry protesters. And this was a turnout from the city. I mean, there were left groups there. But overwhelmingly, it was,
local, yeah.
Your average, everyday white people, right, primarily, who came out.
Right.
And were just really furious. And then there were some young Antifa protesters who attempted to block the retreat of the Klansmen. And there were some arrests and tear gas. And the police, had a massive presence that was only interested in protecting the Klansmen. So that was viewed favorably in general. The Richmond Times-Dispatch, the daily newspaper in Richmond, actually congratulated the protesters for showing how isolated the Klan was. But then Kessler called for another rally at Emancipation Park, the former Lee Park, for August 12th. And that had some momentum until a group called the Virginia Flaggers, which is a right-wing group that promotes displaying the Confederate battle flag. They put up two massive Confederate flags on I-95 north and south of Richmond. So that's the first real welcome you get to the city now. And they have tens of thousands of Facebook fans, and they heavily promoted the protests, and Kessler gives them credit for spreading the message. And so all these, it's sort of like, the rock got turned over and all these ugly vermin started crawling out,
right,
the National Socialists, right, who are Nazis, the Traditional Workers' Party, and the American Vanguard, and the kind of neo-Nazis, and motorcycle gangs that are right-wing, and censors group, and so on. And they began to call it Unite the Right. This was going to be the grand turnout of right-wingers. And they made it perfectly clear that they were emboldened and strengthened because of the election of Donald Trump, who they considered to be their president. So then local groups, immediately began to call for counter-protest. And that was Black Lives Matter, Charlottesville, Standing Up for Racial Justice, Surge in Charlottesville and other cities. And a group of local clergy members called for 1,000 religious leaders to come out to Charlottesville and directly confront the right wing in a nonviolent way. Cornel West, the educator and political activist and philosopher, author, was one who responded. So the town was, of course, as this always happens, it was divided between those who felt like you needed to come out and really confront these Nazis and people who said, you don't want to give them attention, just, ignore them, let them talk to themselves and go home. They don't amount to anything. And one of those was the University of Virginia president, Teresa Sullivan. And she called on the students and faculty to stay away from the protests and stay on campus, attend the alternative events, and so on. So on Friday evening, August 11th, 200 or more of these fascists who were in town for the rally came to the university. And they marched to the university with those bamboo tiki torches that people use outside. Mm-hmm. And the people should go online and see this video. I'm kind of glad I didn't see it before we went to Charlottesville the next day. It's probably the single most chilling thing I've ever seen about the right wing. It was like an old-style Klan rally, Klan movie, say. They came marching down a hill, all chanting, blood and soil, blood and soil, you will not replace. And surrounded the Jefferson Monument on campus, where about 30 Black Lives Matter protesters had stationed themselves. They surrounded them, and while they're chanting, they began to close in, the circle closed around the Black Lives Matter protesters, and then they attacked them. They beat them, they hit them with sticks. They pepper spray them. One black woman who is in town, Richmond here, who was there, said that one of the racists poured lighter fluid on one of the protesters. And the police were watching this. And it wasn't until the people got beat up that they stepped in and declared the march to be illegal and people broke it up. So these were not good omens. And the next day, the rally was supposed to start at noon at Emancipation Park, and people were flooding in from all over the area to protest. And it was such a wide range. There was all kinds of organizations, all kinds of individual people, all kinds of townspeople. But it was also very tense, and I think it probably drew the most militant people on our side. The defenders. Our group is called the Virginia Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And folks generally know us for working to reclaim and memorialize the section of Richmond that was the slave trading district.
Yeah.
Here in Richmond that supplied enslaved people to the rest of the South. So it's really a nationally significant site. And we've been carrying out the fight for 15 years. And it's very much related, of course, to, the twin issue is glorification of the Confederacy that defended the slavery system. So we've been calling for the statues in Richmond to come down since 2006, the 200th anniversary of Lee's birthday, when the state of Virginia spent $450,000 to clean a statue in honor of his birthday. So we got there in Charlottesville and headed out towards Emancipation Park. We had been in touch with Black Lives Matter, Charlottesville Surge, and other local groups, and we went out with some folks from Richmond Surge. That's standing up for racial justice. It's a largely white group. Our organization traditionally has been predominantly African-American. And so we got out there, and we were headed towards Emancipation Park, and it was really tense. I think we got there about 10:30, and the rally was supposed to start at noon. And there were already all of these hordes of, it would be comical if it wasn't so serious, but it was like a Mad Max movie. You know, people with, improvised shields and clubs and helmets. And some of these Nazis were so outfitted that I actually thought they were police in riot gear. And they're carrying knives and guns and pepper spray, and apparently some of them had tear gas canisters. So we set up, we had a banner that said, no shrines to white supremacy, take them all down now. And we positioned ourselves up by the park to one of the entrances. The police say that they had worked out with Spencer and Tesla that they would escort their people into the park, and that the rally organizers disregarded that, and the people came in from all sides of the park. I think they were just terribly disorganized. You know, they're not a real coalition. They all compete against each other. And there's a lot of competition. So
I mean, these are these are almost like cults of personality, these little individual groups that, you know, more like that than a movement, for example.
Well, most of their organizations are built around a single personality.
Right.
And then they compete with each other. And, right. you know, they, they, uh, you know, who has the more pure philosophy and who is, you know, wacko and who is collaborating with the government or the Zionist occupied government, as they like to say.
Yeah, the Zog.
Yeah. So anyway, there was a big standoff at the entrance that we were at. And, you know, I'm an old white guy, so I just went on up into the alt-right rally and filmed it. It was the gathering. The rally hadn't begun yet. But I wanted people to see, you know, just what was there. It was more than 500 of them. Now, for a national Unite the Right rally that made
it's minuscule.
Big,
yeah.
But for a town of 47,000 people, it was a big turnout.
Yeah.
On the other side, you know, our folks were not, you know, there was the clergy and there were, you know, other religious organizations and folks who didn't want to get it, you know, be involved in any problems, but they wanted to be there. And then there were folks who were also, you know, prepared to defend themselves. So, you know, things went back and forth and insults and then bottles started flying and then pepper spray and I don't think anybody on our side had these tear gas canisters, but they began to throw. And of course, that was, you know, then people are coughing and scuffles are breaking out and, you know, it's back and forth. It was a physical struggle on who actually had control of the ground, who actually had control of the area.
Right.
And the protesters really, you know, most of them young, most of them white, they really held the ground and we were able to be helpful in some ways. We have some folks who are trained in first aid and help some folks who are choking and we threw a few bottles and back and out of the way, we threw them out of the way. And so on. And there are a few, you know, like street tactics things that happened that were helpful. But that just went back and forth and back and forth. And it was a little chaotic. And finally, a group of protesters broke through the metal barricades, like fences that the police had set up in the park. And the police took that as an excuse to shut down the rally. I think by that time they were kind of pissed at the non-cooperation of the Nazis. And they shut the thing down. They drove the Nazis out of the park. And then they had, it was like kind of like hitting a pool of mercury with a hammer. Right. Now these thugs were roaming the city.
Right. Little groups of them now kind of scattered every which way. Yeah, right.
That's right. Group of them went over to a Methodist church that had declared itself a safe space for people to come to and attack the mostly elderly people in the parking lot. And this was reported on by ProPublica, who said that police stood across the street and just watched while people were being beaten. We went to Justice Park, where there was also a gathering to see if we could get some information. And they were announcing that the Nazis were, I used that sort of as a generic term, but they weren't, you know, the actual Nazis, right. They're National Socialists, appropriating the name socialist. As Hitler did. And they said that the Nazis were going to be marching on, I believe it's called Freedom Plaza. It's a low-income, predominantly black housing project. So the defenders decided, you know, that was the line. That was the, you know, the red line. And we had to go. And then we heard that other people were going to set up to block a street that the Nazis would be marching on. So we headed off to that intersection, which was Main and Fourth. As we got to the end block on, I guess it was Main that we were on, at the end of the block, we could see people running towards us. The car had just hit the intersection. It just plowed into the crowd of protesters. So we ran up, and people are yelling for medics, and one of our folks is a former Marine and a civilian nurse, and he was able to apply CPR to one of the people who wasn't breathing. And other street medics were you know, rushing to help people, and no cops. No cops.
And this is where Heather Heyer was killed, this is that automobile incident, right?
She died there.
Right.
Heather Heyer died there. 19 other people were wounded.
Seriously. Yeah.
We all knew. We all knew to go to the section. The cops knew. You know, I even talked with a cop. I said, you know, if the Nazis march down to this housing project, are you going to stop them? And he said, well, you know, the streets have been closed down, so it's not an illegal march. There's nothing we can do. I said, okay, thank you. So that of course, changed everything. And at that point, a couple of things happened. One was people were traumatized, and the other one was people were outraged to the point where they were just going after the Nazis. And they drove them out. They shut them down. They drove them out. They hadn't reached that intersection. It was just anywhere they showed up that was just, you know, they were getting these people out of town. And the upshot of it is that I've been, you know, monitoring some of the right-wing websites and so on, and they really admit that this was a terrific defeat. They're blaming the cops.
Yeah.
Some of them are blaming the leadership of the they're blaming Kessler and Spencer, claiming they were police, you know, working with the police to discredit the movement. I mean, they've got all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But whatever Unite the Right ideas they had are gone. And the latest development is that the former head of the Virginia Division of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, who had applied for a permit to hold a rally here in Richmond on September 16th at the Robert E. Lee statue, this 60-foot-tall monstrosity that the mayor and the governor and Senator Tim Kaine all think is a really fine thing and is representative of Virginia and have said so. He was going to hold a rally. He's since said he's withdrawn his permit because of what happened in Charlottesville.
Right.
Which is a little interesting because that group, the Sons of Confederate Veterans, I mean, they venerate these statues. They're phenomenally insensitive to the feelings of the black community, and they're objectively racist, but they do distance themselves from the Nazis and the white supremacists, and I've seen that myself. So what is very sad is that the political leadership of the city and the state are completely up to their eyeballs in complicity in all of these developments. Governor McAuliffe, who's a Democrat, was one time the head of the National Democratic National Democratic Committee, and you know, as a major fundraiser for the Clintons and as presidential aspirations himself. He's in charge of the state police, who are in charge of law enforcement efforts in Charlottesville. He is responsible for the fact that police did not try to, let alone protect, the anti-racist protectors, the protesters, but even just separate the sides, as you know, most police departments do. And the mayor of Charlottesville, who voted to keep the statues up, the vote was only 3-2, and the
Democratic mayor threw in the no vote. Right.
He voted to keep them. He voted no. He didn't want to take them down.
Right.
In Richmond, we have another Democratic mayor, LeVar Stoney, young African American guy who, you know, everybody thinks has a bright future in the party and is a really kind of a complete. He's a creation of the Democratic Party. He doesn't have any real practical experience himself.
Right.
He's just always put forward, you know, as a bright young face. He ran as a millennial. He has called for the statues in Richmond to stay up with signage to explain what they were.
Right.
And he repeated that after Charlottesville, after Heather Heyer was killed. So he set up a commission of 10 historians and museum people, several of whom have already compromised themselves on similar issues. And he gave them a charge to come up with signage and possibly suggestions for new statues to go up on what is called Monument Avenue, where there are these large statues of Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, Jeb Stuart, Jefferson Davis, and Admiral Matthew Murray. And it's the greatest display, the grandest display of Confederate statues in the country, which is fitting because this is the former capital of the Confederacy.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
was a center for the Lost Cause mythology that developed after the Civil War to justify the war and promote white supremacy.
Right.
So that's what we're up to today.
Yeah, you know, people in the North really are ignorant of that whole, you know, that whole body of, I don't know what, it's sort of enriching it to call it an ideology, but You know, that whole history, you know, alternative history, fake history, whatever, the repositioning of what the Civil War was about and of slavery and of the nature of the slave system in the South, that there is this alternate narrative that, you know, pervades the South. Even today it's persisted. And this, the battle over the symbology, I remember in the early 1990s when Cynthia McKinney was in the Georgia State House. She and I think John Lewis, when he first went as a member of Congress, that they were rejecting the flag. They were calling for pulling the stars and bars out of it, to take the statues down. This has been going on 20, 30 years, much longer, but, you know, just in my memory, that far back. And it goes along pretty, you know, uneventfully, usually, since then. They fought the battle, and they lost, like 20, 30 years ago, and now it's almost just a matter of implementation, you know, piecemeal, such as the event that, you know, that was the catalyst for this thing here. And yet, suddenly, it's at the heart again, and you have Terry McAuliffe blaming Trump. You point out that McAuliffe's in charge of the state police, and they did nothing.
It's, you know, some people say, what is this all about, a bunch of statues? It's really about a narrative of the country.
That's right.
And the right wing says, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to take down Lee, and then who's next? Washington? He owns slaves. What about the flag? Those 13 stripes on the flag represent 13 colonies,
right,
and they all had slavery.
That's right.
So where's it going to stop? Well, that's what's at stake.
Mm.
We get back to an understanding of how this country really developed, which was, you know, as George Carlin said, a bunch of slave owners who wanted to be free.
Yeah.
So that's it. But it's also the story of people, you know, regular working folks of all nations, all nationalities, who were brought up to believe this was the land of freedom, justice, and equality, and thought that was a good idea. And then when they realized it wasn't, they fought to make it so.
Right.
So you had the civil rights movement, the labor movement, the women's movement, the LGBTQ movement, the anti-war movement, the environmental movement, the civil rights movement, going back in one form or another to the founding of the country. So that's the real story, you know, the contradiction between the reality and the promise and the struggles that people have engaged in to try to make it real. So we're at a critical point in U.S. history now, where there are two sides, and they're duking it out literally in the streets. But on a much broader framework, it's, you know, the election of Trump legitimized the other side. It normalized Nazism. Trump's chief policy advisor, ensconced in the White House, Stephen Bannon, who, by the way, was born in Virginia and went to high school here in Richmond, he promoted his Breitbart news site as the platform for the alt-right. Spencer and Kessler have their own guy in the White House. So, it's qualitatively a new situation. If I could just draw a couple of conclusions from this.
Yeah, go ahead, because you've got about a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, one is that when these Yahoos show up in town, there has to be a massive turnout. Numbers matter. I mean, forget tactics for a second. You know, you got 500 races. You turn out 10,000 people surrounding them. That's it. It's yep. clear they're isolated. They don't have a social base. Number two, we cannot rely on the police to protect us, ourselves, our movement. Folks in the Black community, Latino community, Indian community, they understand this. But, you know, for a lot of white folks, it was like, you know, a revelation that there were no cops in the streets and people were just duking it out. And what mattered was, were you stronger than the other side? So number three, we now know that these people are murderous. They are paramilitary organizations out for violence. And we have to take that in consideration as we prepare for the future.
That was Phil Wiletto, a founding member of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. He's based in Richmond, Virginia, and he's an eyewitness to what happened in Charlottesville this past weekend. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.